grab a beverage, settle in. When you're ready, we'll begin. Joe and Michael and a guest or two are gonna talk comic books with you.
It's the Casual Comics Cast with your hosts, Joe and Michael.
That was official.
That got it.
And with that official announcement, here we are. Welcome back, everybody, to the Casual Comics Cast. I'm your host, Joe, the Casual Comics Guy. And today we're talking about Spider-Man and Hawkeye. So I thought I'd bring back our resident Spider-Man expert, Mark. Hey, Mark.
Well, hello.
How you doing?
How are you, Joe?
I'm fantastic.
Or amazing.
Or spectacular.
Or hammy. I don't know. Spectacular spider ham.
Spectacular spider ham. And we also have our trusty sidekick, Jeff, joining us again. You're going to get co-producer credit and essential sound guy, Billy, at some point.
Hi, everybody. Oh, that sounded great. Excuse me.
That was you'll fix it in post. Don't worry about
sure.
it.
Sure. Yeah, no worries.
So we're here today to talk about the Marvel blockbuster Spider-Man No Way Home and the Disney Plus series Hawkeye, which just wrapped recently as we record. So really, I mean, Spider-Man just came out a couple of weeks ago as we're recording this. So pretty much I would assume that 90% of people in the world have seen it at this point, right?
At least.
We're going to have a little non-spoiler discussion first for that 10% of the population who may have not seen it, and then we'll get into some things. But it's sort of our mission here on the podcast to help people who aren't super comic book fans understand what they're getting into in the world of comic books. And the movies are starting to get to that point where you can't just walk into a movie fresh anymore, I don't feel like. How are you feeling about Spider-Man No Way Home and your ability to just come in off the street, first Spider-Man movie you've ever seen, and have this be the intro?
Yeah, I don't think so. I think you can hit some basic notes, but you really would be confused, I think, for a good half of the movie. And you wouldn't appreciate it nearly as much as I think everybody really did.
A little bit. So this is Spider-Man No Way Home, the third of the more recent Spider-Man films ever since they rebooted with Tom Holland as the lead actor. So what are some of the things that you would think, Mark, would be essential for somebody to know coming into this movie to get full enjoyment out of it?
Yeah, the spoiler-free items that I remember while watching it were, number one, to your point, I think you really do need to watch the second installment. So the Spider-Man Far From Home, because it pretty much picks up continuity like right at the end of that movie, which if you watch that movie, it's where Mysterio dies, allegedly. I'm guessing he actually really died, but who knows in comics. And he reveals to the world Spider-Man's true identity. So you have to watch, I think, that movie for sure. Other things are in the end of that movie. MJ, played by Zendaya, finds out in that movie that Peter Parker is Spider-Man. And they actually have a little bit of a love thing going on at the end of that movie. So that plays into it. And then also you get the funny kind of B story love of Happy and Aunt May, which I thought was great in that movie also. So a lot of things going on in that movie, which was great also, by the way, that I think play into a lot of the main themes in this movie.
Okay. Jeff, anything that you came away with that you were like, people should actually know this before they walk into this experience?
Let's see. We're spoiler free right now. Is
right,
that right?
Right. For the moment. I mean, imagine you're talking to a friend who has not seen the movie yet. You don't want to spoil it for him, but you're like, hey, do you remember this? This happened. You might want to.
Yeah. I would say at minimum, go on to Wikipedia and review earlier Spider-Man films.
Okay.
Watch them, yes. You know.
Watch them all. All of them. Yeah. Get a marathon.
It might be helpful.
Yeah. The one thing that came to mind for me too is it would be helpful to have a background on some of the other Disney Plus shows, or even just reminding people that there's a thing in the Marvel universe called the multiverse. Doctor Strange references it in the first Doctor Strange movie. He talks about the multiverse, and on Disney Plus, Loki deals with the theme of the multiverse with the TVA trying to keep the timeline and the everything in order. And even Marvel's What If talks a lot about different parts of the multiverse. And even if for people who have seen Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, which was, I think, probably my favorite Spider-Man movie before this one, in the last decade and a half at least, deals with, again, the infinite universes, the multiverse, if you will, that exists in Marvel Comics, where one choice can fracture reality and create a whole different world where there's a different version of different characters.
Yeah, definitely. Like Jeff said, you're much more enriched if, and it's no spoiler that the trailers showed some Spider-Man villains from the previous movies. So you want to at least get a sense of their stories, either their origin stories or how they relate to Spider-Man, because it'll definitely provide a lot more enrichment and enjoyment in the movie. So watch them if you can, but at the very least, do a wiki search and read the synopsis of those movies.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. If you don't come into it, a movie of this scale with this much going on doesn't have enough time to give you enough information. It kind of assumes that you know what's going on to begin with.
Which I actually really appreciate, because I feel like even the old Spider-Man movies, when I'd watch them, I was like, why do they have to reset this at the beginning? Batman movies, like, why do I have to see the flashback again to Batman's parents getting killed? We all get it. Like, at this point, they're part of the zeitgeist in our culture. I got a word a day dictionary for a calendar here, so I'm tapping into it. I opened it up. But like, I think people sort of get who Spider-Man is. They get the essence of it. But it does. You're right, Mark. It ties. It's like a direct continuation of the last movie. You may as well just run the two movies back to back, because where the last movie stops, this one just picks right up.
Right. Right. And you mentioned the multiverse. You know, definitely those are all fun shows. I was going to add when you were asking me, Joe, earlier, is the sneaky one is actually Ant-Man and the Quantum Realm. You know, they kind of tease the idea that there's other realms out there. And I like how Marvel does that, because it's kind of like an appetizer before they go all in with the multiverse.
Well, kind of like they did in the last movie. They did a head fake to the multiverse.
But, right.
And kind of like we're saying, hey, guess what's coming?
Right. I loved it. Yeah. Looking back now, it was a great, great head fake there.
Yeah. I love it. So it sounds like everybody is all in unanimous agreement. This was a pretty terrific Spider-Man movie. And I don't know how we can continue to talk about it more without actually having some spoilerish material. So listeners, beware if we're going to get into spoilers at some point. But rough plot overview, like you said, Mark, and it's in the trailer, right? Is that everybody knows Peter Parker is Spider-Man, and he wishes people didn't know that Peter Parker is Spider-Man, because it's causing him immense amount of difficulty at school and in his life and with the law enforcement agencies who all think that he killed Mysterio. And there's some great moments in there in that first act of the film where just like it's causing him all these problems. And I love the scene where he goes back into his high school and they've got the big Spider-Man case up there. Like, oh, hey, you know, Spider-Man goes to school here. We can use this as a promotional opportunity.
And all the teachers are sitting there going, oh, hey, anything you need. Hey, we love you. You're great.
Except for the one teacher that's still thinks Mysterio's right and Spider-Man's a bad guy. So they, throughout the whole movie, it's around that kind of both sides of the story of you're going to have society that judges you and the truth doesn't matter. Half of them think you're a bad guy because they believe Mysterio, and half of them don't.
Which I think is a great continuation from the comics, because I mean, we when we talked about it on our Spider-Man podcast, Mark, and we talked about the Mount Rushmore of Spider-Man villains, I was like, you got to put J. Jonah Jameson right up there.
Right.
He's not necessarily a super villain, but that dude has been Spider-Man's greatest antagonist for a long, long time.
Yes. Yes. And he's played perfectly, of course, by J.K. Simmons. So that was great.
Wasn't it the best just having him back in that role?
I get goosebumps when he just says Spider-Man. How he says it, I just get goosebumps, because he just says it as like in my head how he says it when you're reading the comics. It's perfect. Yeah.
He's one of those rare instances where they went to the comic book and they carefully peeled the character off the page and went boop, and just threw him up on the screen. Just totally. Perfect translation.
Yeah, that's so true. That's great. Yeah.
And he starts out this movie as the main bad guy, right? I mean, he's the one ruining Spider-Man's life, Peter Parker's life, really just, I don't know. It's kind of interesting because back in the day it was, I guess, you know, why was he trying to ruin Spider-Man's life all the time? I think it's because it sold newspapers, right?
Yeah.
I knew if he had the crazy headline, and somehow we're living in a culture now where he has an on his own online news streaming platform that, guess what he's trying to do? Get the most headlines and get the most clicks. So
that's, man, true.
Stan Lee was way ahead of his time with the newspaper game back in the 60s, translating straight into today where he's just trying to grab viewers with outrageous commentary about Spider-Man being a bad guy. And who's right? There's two sides to the story.
Yeah. And throughout the whole comics, I love how a broke Peter Parker kind of feeds that whole narrative because he has to pay bills. So he can't say anything. So he has to sell pictures knowing, to J. Jonah Jameson of the Daily Bugle, knowing that they're going to be sensationalized as him being the villain. So I love that kind of weird oxymoron relationship that Peter Parker has with Spider-Man, but also with J. Jonah Jameson.
Right. Because without him needing to pay the bills, J. Jonah Jameson doesn't have the pictures to publish.
Right. Right. Yes. Yes. That's really great.
I love it. I love Spider-Man comics.
Yeah.
Is that a hot take? Spider-Man,
that's a good super hot take. Yeah, I think that's good.
So back to the movie though. So I mean, the plot then is, yeah, his life is awful in a lot of ways, and he goes to see Doctor Strange, which, who I love, that's also perfect casting. Just Benedict Cumberbatch as Doctor Strange is fantastic. They pull him in, and in classic Spider-Man fashion, in the middle of Doctor Strange casting the spell, Spider-Man's got a ton of different ideas of, oh, wait, but what about this? What about this? What about this?
He wants it to be perfect. He wants certain people to remember, and he keeps remembering about it. And one moment I was going to say, again, the movie was amazing, but I was for a minute watching that part of the movie thinking, this is a little too crazy even for this story. But then Doctor Strange, almost at the same time I'm thinking of it, he kind of says, I forget that you're still just a kid. And that's a great reminder to the audience that, like, hey, if you were 16 or 17, you'd probably do the same thing. and it reminds you of, like, it's not that crazy. He's just a kid trying to have it all. And in this movie, we'll talk later, he totally grows up. But he's still just trying to have a perfect life. And he's like, I just need it perfect. And he keeps screwing up Doctor Strange's spell, which is great.
Right. And it makes sense at this point in his life, too, because, I mean, this is pretty much his first girlfriend. And he thinks that they're together because part of it is they bonded over her knowing that he's Spider-Man. And, man, think about the first true love that you thought you had in your life, and it's like, I don't want that to happen.
Right. And he keeps remembering the small circle of friends that slowly started knowing it was him.
Right.
Ned. Like, oh, my Aunt May, and oh, Happy, and oh, Ned. So he works backwards from his, like you said, from his concentric circles, and then it keeps screwing up the spell. But that's what a kid would do. He wouldn't even think before he talks. He would just kind of say something and then, oh, wait, what about this? What about this?
That's why you'd think that Dr. Strange would have some sort of form questionnaire. It's like, would you please fill out all of these things before I start casting a spell so I know exactly what I'm doing?
Right.
Right. Right.
There's a more rigorous entry process to see my primary care physician than Dr. Strange, master of the mystic arts.
So he even gets caught up in the whole thing of, like, Spider-Man's just a kid, but he has a ton of respect for him. So he'll do anything for him, but he keeps kind of screwing up himself because he's kind of an arrogant guy too, right? Like, I can cast these spells and I can figure it out myself. And he kind of gets caught up in the whole moment also.
Right. And they changed that moment from the trailer, because in the trailer, there's a line where Wong tells him not to cast the spell. And Wong's pretty much like, ah, I'm out of here, whatever you're doing. I did like that pivot too, with Wong being the Sorcerer Supreme.
I do. I love that. And I love what you mentioned about the spell, because when in the trailer, I'm like, why would he screw up such a serious spell? But they make it in the movie like it's actually a pretty easy spell to cast. You just got to be really careful, obviously, with any spells. But Wong's like, you know, all right, if you want to cast it, like, he didn't, like, it wasn't as dangerous as they made it out to be, which I liked better.
Well, but he did say that, you know, that kind of spell skirts the edges of multiple realities, and you got to be very careful about it.
Right, right. So they add a little warning label, but in the trailer, Wong was, you know, vehemently opposed to it. And in the thing, he was just like, I'd be careful. And that's, of course, not what Doctor Strange does. He's never about being careful.
That's because he's got the Winds of Watoom at his disposal. The Crimson Bands of Sidorak.
The cauldron of something that Tony Stark leans against. Right. Remember that? Are you really leaning against the cauldron of the cosmos?
Oh, man, there's just so much to like about this movie. And Doctor Strange was probably one of my favorite Marvel movies. So it was really good to see him back. And yeah, the spell went bad, but it went bad in a way that he contained it, in a way that he thought it was contained. And then is when things start going wrong. And again, it's just kind of funny that Peter's like on his way to try and do a good deed and get the college admissions counselor to reconsider not letting him and his friends into Harvard. And then is the big moment in the trailer. Here comes Doc Ock.
Yes. Great, great, great scene there. And then you get to see a glimpse of the Green Goblin before Strange zaps him back and tells him what happened. And, you know, kind of skipping around a bit, but when they do that fight scene with Doctor Strange, that was another moment watching it the second time, is that he got pretty injured fighting the lizard. Like, he was hurting. And so everybody's like, well, Spider-Man can't really beat Strange in a fight, but he was pretty messed up. He was grunting. He had like cuts on his hand and his face, and he was actually hurting. Like, I think he got pretty messed up in that battle.
Yeah, I think so. So, I mean, we don't have to hit every plot beat, but all the classic villains.
Why not? It was awesome, Joe.
Well, we can. Don't let me skip
around.
No,
we shouldn't. We don't have time.
But all the villains from all the prior Spider-Man movies show up. I think all of them. I don't think they met. Well, James Franco's dead, so Hobgoblin's dead. He does not come back. But Green Goblin was dead, and he does come back.
No, right? I was just thinking you're right, because technically even Venom, like every villain was there.
Right?
From every movie.
Right. Not well, they didn't bring in both Venoms, just one of them. But
right, right.
I thought so. Out of all those villains that come back, you've got Dr. Octopus, Green Goblin, you've got Sandman came back, Electro, and what's his face from the other movies, the Andrew Garfield movies.
We got the lizard.
Lizard, right?
You didn't have Rhino, but he was already taken care of.
Rhino, exactly.
I kept counting,
which was one of the funnier lions in the movie.
I kept counting during the film, like, okay, I only count five villains. Isn't this supposed to be the Sinister Six? Where's the number six? It kept driving me crazy.
Right. But Venom showed up at the end, which was,
yeah, I suppose they would count that. And Vulture is incarcerated, so I don't know.
Who knows why they chose the ones in prop back. So out of those villains, though, which one were you most glad to see again?
Hands down, Dr. Octopus.
Yeah,
Alfred Molina is just the best.
100% agree with Jeff. He's a great actor. He plays the character well. And it was one of my favorite Spider-Man growing up movies, Spider-Man 2. So great villain, good ending for him on that. So yes, I agree with Jeff. Doc Ock.
Alfred Molina is like, you know, his career turning moment was the whole, throw me the idol and I'll throw you the whip. So you throw me the idol, I throw you the whip. He's just been on a skyrocket since then.
And every time I tell somebody that was him, they're like, no, it wasn't. You're lying.
You know, and I thought I was going to be the most excited to see Dr. Octopus too, because the way he showed up and because of the fun we had at the Spider-Man 2 premiere, where it's like this chip right here, and they brought the chip back. That became a plot point.
I was going to tell you, Joe, that was our moment. I thought of you when I saw it, when they're like, they got to fix the inhibitor chip that Joe said was going to be fried in the first 5 minutes of the movie.
Well, as great of a director as Sam Raimi is, that moment in Spider-Man 2 where it, like, the camera zooms in, he's like, this inhibitor chip right here is the only thing that keeps these things from making me psychotic. I'm like, that thing's fried in like 3 minutes, I promise you.
Well, you literally leaned over to me and whispered that. You're like, this thing's gone in about 10 minutes.
But that was, and then that became a plot point. I was super excited they were going to fix the inhibitor chip. But I was actually way more impressed than I thought I would be with Green Goblin, because he wasn't my favorite villain in the first set of, but he did an awesome job this time. Did you believe when he showed up that he was reformed? Like when that he couldn't remember and he broke the goblin mask. He shows up and he's like, I'm just a dude. I'm just here to, did you buy it a minute?
I think he was going to be okay until they said they're going to save everybody. Then I think it's switched off. It would have been an interesting, you know, question to ask the director, but I think that's what set him off, was when he's like, I'm going to heal everybody. And his Green Goblin subconscious is like, you're not going to kill me. And then it immediately took over. I think as soon as he realized that he was going to try to save everybody. By the way, is that a great meta moment when he's like, you know, I'm something of a scientist myself?
That's great. All the millennials are sitting there giggling, like, oh, I've seen that on the internet.
That was a great, I mean, the crowd just erupted in laughter when he said it. It was hilarious.
He had some really great moments. He did. And as much as everybody hated that goblin mask, when he crushed it and broke it, everybody's like, yes, the dumb mask is gone.
Well, that's the great thing. Willem Dafoe is frightening enough without the mask. He's better without it.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And the hobgoblin nod when he had the hoodie on.
Yeah.
It was amazing. I got chills when they showed it. But yeah, him just laughing and doing the goblin laugh while he's getting punched. Like, that was, we're going to talk about top moments later, but that was a top action moment for me when he's just like laughing at him while he's punching him.
Willem Dafoe impressed the heck out of me. Not that I didn't know he was a great actor before, but they had me thinking that he was actually going to turn out to be a good guy. And he just went over the top insane in a way that I thought was amazing.
Yes. And when Peter's Spidey tingle went off, I was like, what is going on? And then I didn't catch it either, Joe. Like when he webbed Green Goblin or William Dafoe, and I was like, oh yeah, here we go. Because you knew something was going to go bad. You just didn't know, was Electro going to be the one to do it? Was Doc Ock's inhibitor chip going to get refried? Like, what was going to happen? You didn't know what. But then when he webbed Green Goblin or Norman Osborn, that was awesome.
Yeah. Anyway, so the classic villains were all back, which was amazing. Then the classic Spider-Mans all show up. Dun, dun,
dun. But you knew the rumors were out there. I was really hoping they'd be there. And then when they did the first, you know, whatever, with the Ned Leeds, you know, portal thing,
right?
You just knew it was going to be a new Spider-Man there. I just didn't think both of them were going to show up. I'm like, well, they might get Andrew Garfield, but I don't know if Tobey Maguire is going to actually do it. And they both showed up.
That was awesome. I thought that was awesome.
It was great to see him, but I was a little underwhelmed by Toby's appearance. He just kind of walked through and was like, hey, what's going on? You know, like, come on, do a little bit of something with him.
He was like, I bet you thought I was Mysterio. Always confused. He called Jake him a youth Gyllenhaal
pastor later, which was great too. Oh, yeah. To Jeff's point, he did kind of look like a youth pastor.
Yeah, and he looked like he was just, you know, dazed and not sure what was going on or where he was. Like, it's like, I just walked into the store and I forgot what it was I came in here to buy, you know?
I think, because they couldn't explain everything, an interesting thing to explore later is at what point in their timelines did they actually get plucked?
Mm.
Because I think Andrew Garfield got plucked short, like maybe a few years after Spider-Man, like he was still hurting from Gwen Stacy.
Sure.
And then Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man, he's like living a happy life with MJ and he's just kind of chilling. So he's a lot, I think you're right, Jeff. It's like you remember him from the other Spider-Man movies. And I think it was probably maybe even decades, maybe even 10 years or more after one of those movies.
Yeah. Yeah. He seemed like, I mean, it was definitely that he was older. He's aged. Because if you talk about favorite moments in the movie, like my number one favorite moment in the movie is when Andrew Garfield cracks his back for it. It's like, it gets you, doesn't it? The swinging right here in the lower back after a while.
Well, because I thought for sure they were going to de-age Tobey Maguire. Because I'm like, they got to de-age him, but they didn't. Mm-mm. So that's why I'm guessing they were like, they're trying to make the point, like, this is actually a long time after Spider-Man 3, the original Spider-Man 3.
Right.
Yeah, I agree.
Which is why, Jeff, I think that's why you got kind of the chillax, you know, older kind of kind of geezer almost guy. He's probably fought a lot of battles and he's probably super tired anyway.
Yeah. I'm just upset that Nicholas Hammond didn't show up, but that's me. I'm old school.
I knew you were going there. I knew you would.
he wanted the Spider-Man from the Electric Company to show up. Whoever that was.
I think he did. The one
nobody knows who he is.
It's like a giant thwip on the screen, and then like they throw a black net on people.
And then a little voice bubble. Gotcha.
Oh, so many incarnations of Spider-Man they could have gone to. It was great.
That was great.
So which one was your favorite return of the Spider-Man?
Oh, for me, well, it was interesting because Grace, my daughter, when we saw the movie, she asked me what favorite Spider-Man I liked. And she goes, well, wait a minute, hold on. Before you answer that, she goes, this is actually a better question, which I thought was great. She said, of the three, who's your favorite Peter Parker? Oh. Who's your favorite Spider-Man? And then who's your favorite both? So I'll give you those three. So my favorite Peter Parker is Tobey Maguire. My favorite Spider-Man is actually Andrew Garfield. And then favorite like balance is Tom Holland.
Nice. You managed to compliment all three.
I did. That's true. I liked actually, I didn't like of the movies by far, the Andrew Garfield ones are not very good, but I actually was disappointed because I liked him as Spider-Man.
Really? Yeah. I need to go watch those. I haven't watched either one.
Yeah. Like very lanky. A lot of his action scenes were more Spider-esque. If you watch him, like he's crawling over Lizard and stuff, like wrapping him up. So he does a lot more spider-like stuff, which I really liked. Cool. But I didn't like the movies.
Okay. And you're giving Tobey Maguire a pass on Spider-Man 3 when he like...
Oh, totally. Or maybe a bonus because
when he flips the collar up and kind of struts down the street.
Yes. Because he plays the nerdy guy better. Like when he's the nerd guy and then he, you know, in Spider-Man 2, he just becomes Peter Parker and just that whole... song goes around and I just think he plays a better nerd guy, Spider-Man guy better.
Yeah, he's so got many... more of an innocence about him.
Right. Yeah.
It's those big blue eyes.
That's right. How about you, Joe? If you had to pick the best three, what would you pick, like best Peter Parker, best Spider-Man, best both?
It's hard because I haven't seen the Spider-Man movies with Andrew Garfield, but seeing him in this movie makes me want to because I had such a bad impression of him. But he steals the show in the scenes that he's in. I
agree. Yes.
The introduction, he's like trying to, they're trying to make him prove he's Spider-Man. So he just like sticks to the ceiling. He's like, there, I did it. I proved it. Well, go crawl around. Are you serious?
I'm not going to do that. He's like, I'm not going to. Jeff, do you have a preference of the three or do you remember the movies?
I'm pretty much in line with what you said. I love Tom Holland. I think he just embodies the character perfectly. The balance between his Peter Parker and his Spider-Man, who is much more like he is in the old school comics, you know, smart alecky and wisecracking. But Tobey will always be my first and best Spider-Man. Andrew Garfield, with those movies, like you said, they're not the best of all of them, but I'll be darned if I didn't love his performance in this movie. And I was really happy with his arc and his development. I thought he was great.
Yeah. I agree. If I had to pick one, I would pick Tom Holland of all three, like you said, but they all did a good job and they took the best greatest hits of their story arcs and their characters and put them in this movie, which is also what made it a fantastic movie.
And I think it's proof that much like Batman, you can do different things with the character. You can put them in different scenarios, different incarnations, and every single one of them is valid and every single one of them is interesting.
Right.
I agree. I think the thing that distracts me about Andrew Garfield as Spider-Man, though, is that he looks like Jean Raffio from Parks and Rec too often. It's the hair. It's the hair guy. Get it under control. Oh, boy. All right. So what were, you know, I feel like I've just randomly been throwing out all my favorite geek out moments. And Mark, I know you got a giant list. Give me some of your geek out moments.
Well, yeah, you're right. I mean, I think the list could go on and on.
All right, give me the top three.
I got three here. So in no particular order, the fact that Aunt May says, with great power, there must also be great responsibility.
Oh, Jeff, which is giving you a hard.
It's the direct quote from the comic, which is they had never done that in the movies before. So I just got super big goosebumps when she said that. I knew at that moment she was going to die, and I got all choked up. Like, that is probably number one for
Jeff
me.
Jeff looks extremely unhappy with your choice. Here.
No, he's right.
I think he's nodding in agreement. I think. Yeah.
Don't say that line. Good God, don't say it.
Okay, so your reaction was to the emotions of the scene, not to the commentary Mark was giving on.
Oh
Aunt
no,
May.
Mark's dead on. He's got okay.
it. It bothered me at first, though. It bothered me for a moment because I was like, they're gonna try and shoehorn this in here. And then they brought it back in a way that I really appreciated later when they bond over that. And right. He's like, what did you just say? And they've all, every Spider-Man, it's an essential part of Spider-Man is to have had that moment.
Right. Right. And it didn't even, you know, normally because I'm such a big Spider-Man comic guy, you'd think as a purist, I'm like, only Uncle Ben can say that line, but that's his Uncle Ben. And right. That's like Jeff said earlier, they took different pieces and angles and created their own character in Tom Holland's Spider-Man. And I thought that was great. They didn't have to do the origin story again, but you were actually getting the origin story in this movie to him becoming the Spider-Man that is about, this is what we do. We help people. And it kind of snuck up on you, which is what I loved about it. So that was my number one. My number two was Doctor Strange at the end. When Spider-Man agrees that he has to have everybody forget him, he basically says something to the effect of, we, all of us who love you will forget you. And so he was admitting that he loved Spider-Man. And that got me really sad and choked up again. And I didn't think I would. I'm like, why am I getting so sad about this? But it was like, he realized the sacrifice that he was making. And so he even got choked up. Like, that's a big move for this kid to do this. And he was trying to avoid it. He was ready to like have the whole multiverse crash down. And he kind of even knew that was an answer. Like, he knew that was probably how the spell could be fixed, but he's like, I'm not even going to suggest that to him. And he suggested it.
Yep. There was not a dry eye in the audience at that final scene.
That was tough. And then the, you already talked about earlier, the number three one was, William Dafoe in the fight scene when he's laughing while Peter Parker's punching him in the face. So those are my three top ones, Joe and right. Jeff.
Jeff, what about you? Anything else?
I didn't have time to really put a lot of thought into it. I just came up with these while Mark was talking. Ned discovering that he might just be a wizard.
Yeah.
Was wonderful. I love it.
Awesome. He's slingering. He's like, oh. And then he can't close it. I mean, it was all done with really great effect, but it could be. He could undergo magical training. He's actually got it took him a lot. He figured it out a lot quicker than Doctor Strange did.
Well, that's true. Yeah.
Yeah. And Jeff, you talked about it. I think they foreshadowed a Ned Leeds being a bad guy.
Yes.
You could definitely see that happening because he talks about it when he's talking to the other Peter Parkers around. His best friend, he had to kill him and he turned bad. And now he has magical powers. Like, he could be a future villain.
And Ned even says to him, he's like, don't worry, I'm not going to turn into a bad guy. But right.
Right. Uh-huh. Great foreshadowing things there.
Especially with the way it ends where Ned doesn't even know Peter Parker, Spider-Man anymore.
That's right. That's right. Maybe he kills his meemaw or something because he doesn't clean out the cobwebs.
Too many cobwebs. Spider-Man wouldn't take care of them.
I also loved the scene at the grave site with Happy. It was just really, really touching. The reference back to Tony. That just really got me. That was a good one. Go ahead, Mark.
I was going to say, because that's a great one too, that you mentioned. And it made you realize that like they forgot even Peter. Like, I think her gravestone says like beloved aunt, but it doesn't even like, they don't even like, even though she's dead, like nobody knows that Peter was survived by her.
That was the thing I was still puzzling over that I could not figure out is I thought the spell was going to make everybody forget that Peter Parker was Spider-Man, but it feels like now they all have to forget who Peter Parker even is. Like, nobody knows him anywhere. It's not like they just know him still and forgot he's Spider-Man. They don't even know who he is. Happy doesn't recognize him.
Right, because they kind of, at the very end, when he goes into the coffee shop or whatever where she's working, they don't even recognize him. Mm-hmm. So they forgot. Now, he exists. Everybody had to forget who he was. So he's like just another kid in your class you don't remember. So he exists. Like, if they were to be like, look him up and like, was Peter Parker in my class? Yes. But they forget who he is.
Happy is still broken up over Aunt May being dead because he remembers her.
Yep.
But Peter shows up and he's like, oh, I have no idea who this random weirdo is.
Yeah, he's like, you knew her kind of thing. Yeah, exactly. That was a reminder to Jeff. I like Jeff's moment there. It was a very poignant reminder that nobody knows who he is. And it was a huge sacrifice.
Yeah. And all I could think about is, is he renting an apartment? Does he still have a credit history? what is going on? How is he making money now? Can he apply
for a credit card? What's going on?
Well, how is he making money? How is he affording this apartment?
How can they do KYC on him?
Well, because if I'm not mistaken, they show at the end he's got a book that he's got to take the GED because he doesn't have a high school transcript anymore.
Well, and that's kind of what was bothering me is this wasn't a time travel fix. This was a spell of forgetting. So he should still have his high school diploma. He should be able to show people, look, yeah, I'm a graduate. I did all these things. Here's my report cards. Because people forgot. It didn't change the past.
I think there must have been something in there where it was no longer good enough for people to forget that Peter Parker's Spider-Man in order to keep all of these people from different universes from coming over and trying to take him out. People had to forget that Peter Parker existed. That was how I took the ending.
So maybe he should still have
proof.
Maybe he has a social security number, Jeff, but
yeah,
but so the system knows, but like his school has no memory of him actually attending that school.
But if they go back to their records, he should still be there.
But he might not be in the records. He might be like, he might still be identified as a person in the government system, but not in like the school system. Who knows how deep it goes.
Yeah, I was going to say, his report cards didn't disappear just because people forgot.
Yeah, I agree with you. The GED thing, I'm like, wait a minute. So he still went to that school. Yeah,
I could see it, though. I could buy it in a weird way of like, you can't really just go back to your school and be like, they're like, I've never seen you before in my life. I have no idea who you are. You're like, well, look in the thing. I took the classes and you asked the teacher, did this kid take your class with you? I don't know. No, that's true.
So he might exist digitally.
Like there's a faceless.
Nobody has any memory of.
He risks a huge amount of Mandela effect in the people that he talks to at the school.
What was your other one, Jeff? I think he said he had another one or two.
My final was just simply the appearance of Dr. Octopus. That was a thing of beauty. It was lovely. And the arms started coming in. I'm like, oh yeah, here we go. I found myself not necessarily cheering because when we saw it, we saw it with maybe three other couples in the theater. And I'm not sure how we managed because every showing was sold out.
Yeah.
But when we saw it, there wasn't all the cheering and all the excitement and all the fun. And I really, really missed that. But I did find myself just grinning from ear to ear all the time throughout this movie, just like an idiot. I'm just sitting there just with a big old smile on my face. And that was probably the biggest one of all.
That's great.
Nice.
Yeah, I was able to watch it opening night and it was a full house and there was a lot of cheering and I just realized how much I missed that because all the minor references, people were cheering and getting little laughs out of it. You knew people were there that watched all the movies and even read some of the comics too.
Yeah, that's an amazing experience to be able to have. I'm glad at least for now movie theaters are open again. We'll see if it lasts, but this was one great one to get in at the theater, exactly for the reasons you said. I think there's one more moment that clicked with me, and then we can move on to Hawkeye. But I thought that the writers took a lot of care in really showing the differences between the Spider-Mans too, and the different experiences they had. And where it really came to life for me is in the scene where all three of them have to work together. And at one point they realize they're all just fighting by themselves because that's all Spider-Man's ever known how to do. He doesn't have a team. Tobey Maguire's never been part of a team. Andrew Garfield's never been part of a team. And Tobey Maguire's like, hey, wait, I was in the Avengers. I know how this works, right? I know how to fight as a team. I'm going to show you guys how to work together with people instead of just being the lone Spider-Man out there. I thought that was like a really cool illustration of the differences in the experiences they all had and how, even though they're all Spider-Man, if they ever come together again, I think you'll see a lot of that with multiverse stuff, is just the different experiences they have. The writers are taking great care to illustrate that in a different way.
Yep. Yep. And I think to what you're saying is, I mean, Tom Holland, Spider-Man, got advice from Captain America, who's probably the greatest tactician ever, of being on the Avengers, and of course, Iron Man, Tony Stark. But what we were talking about earlier, which is a lot of great moments, but the moments of the wrapping up the story threads of the other two Spider-Men. So that, you know, he didn't save Gwen Stacy, he saved Peter Parker's MJ, right? Peter Parker, Tobey Maguire finally got to revisit with Doc Ock, Otto Octavius. I mean, that was just a heartwarming. You said you were grinning, Jeff. I mean, that was my biggest grin moment. All the Doc Ock ones are great, but when he said hi, Otto, and trying to do better, which was a callback to their quote earlier in the second movie with Tobey Maguire, it was great. Like the way they wrapped up those character story arcs of those multiverse Spider-Man was just remarkable.
Yeah. Love it. And just a little throw in thing, when Dr. Octopus has the arc reactor and he's like, oh, the power of the sun in the palm of my hand. I'm like, oh, yes, yes,
got it. All right. Well, as the listeners can probably tell, we could talk about this movie forever because it was like such a good film. So if you have not seen it, see it. If you have seen it, see it again. I'll probably see it multiple more times before Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness.
Man, I can't wait.
I'm so psyched for that. But before we go, let's get in a little bit of chat about Hawkeye, which just wrapped on Disney Plus, 6 episodes, which was I think it's a nice amount of episodes, not too much, not too little,
yeah,
for me. But same thing, same place we started before. Like, what are things that you think that, you know, if you're just sort of a casual viewer of these things, that you should refresh yourself on before you head into viewing Hawkeye?
Yeah, I would say a couple things. Is I think it's in Age of Ultron where they visit Hawkeye's family because they have no place to go. So that's a good little call out there because you get it introduced to his family. And then, of course, Endgame, when Hawkeye becomes Ronin and does bad guy things for a while. So those are the two main ones, I think, is those two Avengers movies where you can pull into it. But I think, Joe, and you might know this more than me, the Matt Fraction comics? Yep. For yeah. Hawkeye, they did a lot of nods there. So if you want to read some comics, I would go back and read Hawkeye's, I think it's a limited series, Joe, if I'm wrong, or at least a story arc or two there. That's also a good one to catch up on if you have time.
Yeah, you'll get the origins of Pizza Dog.
That's right.
In the comic, which is great. Yeah, there's a lot of nods to it. And in fact, like the visual style of the credits, both yes. opening and ending credits, very much come from the artist who drew that series. His first name is, his last name is Aja, A-J-A, I think it's Alexander Aja. He's a fantastic artist. It's a little different in that in the Hawkeye TV series, he's still a little bit more like the comics. He's not a family guy. He's still a rogue adventurer, single dude living the high life. We did a whole Hawkeye podcast. I didn't realize how many superhero chicks Hawkeye dated in the course of his Avengering career. But yes, if you want to catch up on a comic, that's an amazing series. And the visual style came straight from it. But yeah, in this series, Hawkeye is a family man. I think having a, I mean, who's, if you're watching this, you have to have seen Avengers Endgame. So you have to remember how the things ended between him and Natasha again. You know, I think that's going to be a big thing for a long time in the movies, is that sacrifice she made. It wouldn't hurt to know a little bit about the Black Widows. If you saw the Black Widow movie, if it's going to deal with Natasha stuff. And, I think those are the things, but I think you can come into it pretty, pretty fresh. We were here, watching it all over the holidays, and my father-in-law was here, And he, I don't think he's seen any of the movies, and he watched the first two episodes of Hawkeye. He's like, that was really good. That was good. So they do a good job of, it's not so thick in the mythology that you won't get it or be able to keep up with it.
Right.
So even in fact, it was like he hasn't seen the movies. I know he hasn't seen a lot of, and it was like, he's like, let me guess, he was Ronin, right? You got it.
Yeah, so I guess you don't need to watch them. It would add some depth to it, but
it would,
definitely. And then of course, because this is a really good villain played by Vincent D'Onofrio, watching the Daredevil Netflix series, and we missed that on the moments. It was my fourth best moment, which is the Matt Murdock cameo
in the
Spider-Man movie. That was actually number four on my list. There were just so many great moments.
But
you get some depth to Kingpin. In that he's a great villain in that Daredevil series.
Not a show that everyone can watch with the little kids at home.
No, but definitely not.
But that is, I think, fantastic, is it looks like between bringing Matt Murdock into Spider-Man and bringing Kingpin into this, they may start tying in some of these other loose ends of other TV shows into the main Marvel Cinematic and TV universe now. I'm very excited for that.
That's right.
Excuse me. I'm drinking this carbonated iced tea beverage. It's
well, that's your first mistake.
Yeah, don't drink anything carbonated while podcasting. Tip number one. That should have been on the thing with the microphone.
Yeah, it wasn't anywhere in that article you sent me, Joe.
Although Jeff taught me the dangers of eating cheese before getting on.
Yeah,
I didn't know that was the thing.
Yeah, it gums up the throat real good.
Yeah, and then I thought this would clean it out, and it did, but it's causing me other issues. So overall though, Hawkeye 6 episodes, you know, what'd you guys think?
I know very little about Hawkeye. Like I said, the only thing I knew about Hawkeye growing up was I had the Topps bubblegum sticker of Hawkeye saying, Annie Oakley, I ain't. And I'm like, what does that even mean? I don't know who Annie Oakley is. I don't know who this clown is. What's going on? So
why does he have fins on his head?
Yeah, exactly. And a big H. Ooh. Getting to know him in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, what little you actually get to know of him was nice groundwork for this. And I think I would add that you should probably see the very first Avengers so that you understand the whole Battle of New York and the impact that all of that had. But I thought, you know, coming into it mostly cold, I had no problem at all. I fell right into it and I started loving it from the first frame.
I think he got it, which is, I think Kate Bishop points it out early, is the dude's got a branding problem.
I do. I love that. I love how she kind of hits it right at the heart of it. And he's like, I like it that way. I want to be anonymous. I don't want people to know who I am. And she's like, but you inspired me. And that was a nice touch of nicety to the whole theme of the series.
But it's cool because it calls all the way back to the introduction of Hawkeye in the Thor movie, the first Thor, where he's just sitting up in the hawk's nest waiting in case he needs to snipe somebody. He doesn't want to be seen. He doesn't want to be noticed. That's his thing. He's just
right.
Stealthy. He's in the shadows. And then the Avengers movie, again, same thing. He's up in his nest again. He's always like lurking in the shadows, ready to take somebody out if it needs to happen.
Yes.
I forgot about Thor. The introduction to Hawkeye and Thor is like, better go quick. I'm starting to like this guy.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. He's and I love how he breaks and goes evil in the Avengers movie. So Jeff's call out is good, is that it shows you how dangerous he can be when it's like, that's just a guy that just shoots arrows, but he knows when to strike. He's very precise. He knows the right situation to use certain things within his arsenal, and it's deadly.
All right, so let's talk about the trick arrows. One of my favorite parts of the show. He's got a handful of Pym particles too.
I know.
Who's handing those out?
That's right. Maybe he just needs a smaller dose. Who knows? Just like a drop. But they were great. All of his trick arrows are great. And I'm glad that they made that a big part of the movie or the show, because that's really one of his trademark, is all the different arrows that he has.
There were really great geek out moments. She asked him about a boomerang arrow. He's like, what dummy would use a boomerang arrow? And in the Matt Fraction comic book, the boomerang arrow is a big help to him at one point. And it's Kate Bishop making fun of the boomerang arrow, and he's like, "You don't get the boomerang arrow. It's right. it'll save your skin at some point."
That's right.
the pim, just a little throwaway lines, like when he does the pim particle arrow, and she's like, "Do they come back?" He's like, "I don't know. Well, I'll have to call Scott about this." That's right.
they're all talking really tiny.
any you know, so it's six episodes, right? Let me ask the burning question that everybody's arguing online: is Hawkeye a Christmas show?
So I think the timing of it coming out and being Christmas was great, and they mentioned it, I think, in the first episode when the family's talking about all the traditions that they want to do. But when you get through the whole six episodes, my vote would be no, that it's not a Christmas show.
No, Jeff?
That'd be my vote. Even though at the end they have the big...
No, let me influence you, Jeff.
I'm going to give it I'm going to give it a reluctant... Yeah, it is, because the whole thing throughout the series is that, you know, he has that anxiety about needing to be back with his family in time for Christmas. And is he going to make it? Stuff keeps popping up and ruining his plan.
I would say it's as much of a Christmas show as Die Hard is a Christmas movie.
No, you're wrong. Die Hard is absolutely a Christmas movie.
Yeah, I would, I'm unanimous on that with Jeff. It's absolutely, and you guys can sway me. Mine is a reluctant no if Jeff's is a reluctant yes. So I'm just kind of on the fence. They bookend it nice with the presence at the end and the very beginning, but when you go through the whole story itself, I'm just like, I'm not reminded that it's Christmas other than the occasional call home.
Yeah, Christmas is
a gigantic Christmas tree.
That's right. Yes.
Right. The finale takes place on the Rockefeller Center ice under the tree, which is, I mean, it's not essential that it happens during Christmas time. I think it adds a lot of atmosphere. And then it's that relatively cheap plot gimmick of, will he get home on time for Christmas, where it's trying to add emotional stakes.
Yeah, but there's no themes built into it that tie into the idea of Christmas. So in that sense, then no, it's not.
Buddy the Elf doesn't make an appearance at any point. Right. That would have been cool to see him in the background at the Rockefeller and Ice.
But there's definitely themes throughout. I mean, I get how they show a lot of the visuals are Christmassy, but yeah, I could be persuaded either way that yeah. It is kind of, that's probably why it's such a hot internet topic, because you could make a strong case one way or the other.
It could have easily been any other event in his family's life that he's trying to get home in time for. It wasn't like urgent that it was Christmas.
Yeah, it could have been like Memorial Day or Labor Day or gotta be home in time for Valentine's Day. I don't know.
Sure. Right. But I mean, overall, I mean, is it something you recommend? Did you guys enjoy watching it? I did.
I enjoyed it. I would recommend it if I have to stack rank all the Marvel TV series.
Yeah,
it would
let's
probably be towards the bottom.
Yeah. So how would you stack rank them?
How would I? Oh, well, that's a tough one. The timing of when WandaVision came out was just, I was so hungry for such an interesting story there. So her and Loki are kind of tied for one for me. Then I would probably put What If. I really liked What If, even though it's animated.
Essential and then, viewing before Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness right. Now.
And then Falcon, Winter Soldier, and then I would put Hawkeye last. All really good, but I just like WandaVision and Loki quite a bit better.
Okay. Jeff, any thoughts? Have you seen them all?
I'd put Falcon and Winter Soldier first. And then probably follow with very, very closely with Loki, and then Hawkeye, and then WandaVision. WandaVision took 3 or 4 episodes for me to even understand what the hell was going on. But by that time, I'm like, okay, I'm with this. But it didn't grab me from the beginning like the other ones did.
Okay, so this is Jeff's last episode, listeners.
WandaVision.
I said I liked it in the end.
Yeah, he did like it. I could see that. I could see, and I was like, after each episode at the beginning, Jeff, I was reading all kinds of fan theories. Like, I enjoyed the fact that I didn't know anything, but that's not for everybody. Like, what's happening here?
Yeah, it was a struggle to get my wife to watch episode 4.
Yeah.
I'm like, come on, just stick with it. It's going to get really, really good.
Okay.
That's right. How about you, Joe? What were your...
No, I mean, number one clear for me was WandaVision easily, but that's probably because those were always like my two favorite characters in the comics. Always. Like,
yeah,
we've talked about some of the social impact of X-Men comics and some of those things. And that was a series that hit me when I was a teenager, and it's kind of a corny series, but it comes out of, you know, the mutants always had this prejudice against them in the comics. And then he's just like an android synthesoid. And it was one of these things where like them getting married and being together was so taboo in the comics, because everybody's like, you can't marry a person like this. And it became very much about acceptance of two people who society doesn't think that it's right for them to be together and to be married. And it was like, they're like, forget it. This is what we're doing. It's us against the world. And a lot of things where like her family disowned her for marrying a synthesoid. Everybody hated the mutants. And so it hit me at a right moment where I just love these characters. And I've been waiting for their arc to continue in the movie. So, I mean, I get it. It's personal for me. That's my number one easily. And then I think I actually put Hawkeye number two. I loved Loki and I like Captain America, the Winter Soldier. I thought between Captain America and Falcon, Winter Soldier, which then became Captain America, Winter Soldier, Falcon and Winter Soldier, that had some great stuff in it. And I liked the way it continued those two character story arcs. And Loki, you know, I'm a sucker for the time travel, multiverse, all that stuff, the Doctor Who-ish kind of stuff they put in there. But it was just nice with Hawkeye to have a series that took place in 6 days of real time that seemed relatively low stakes. That it was just like a dude trying to get home for Christmas, a girl who got in trouble over her head. It's the tracksuit mafia. This isn't Thanos. This isn't world threatening stuff of a worldwide terrorist network. It's not like the multiverse fracturing. It's just a dude with a problem. And a girl with a problem, and they're going to help each other out. I thought that was just different enough that it was sort of what I needed to get away from some of, like, it's almost like when Ant-Man came out and all of the Marvel movies had just been so, I mean, not depressing, but they'd been so serious and a little bit before that leading up to Ant-Man. And then it's like Avengers and, you know, Infinity War hits. And it's like, boom, everything's like crappy. And it's like, oh, here's Ant-Man to lighten the mood a little bit.
Yep.
That was what I liked about Hawkeye. And I do think it's a nice way, with Kingpin being in it, is to start bridge to some of those of what I thought the Netflix series was going to be, which is the down to earth, just the people who are, they're not out the Guardians of the Galaxy. They're not the Eternals. They're not out like fighting these super cosmic threats. Yeah. They're just, I'm hoping for a Heroes for Hire, where it's just two dudes
who street hang a level shingle, heroes,
right? This is Heroes for Hire, and you walk in, you got a problem, and here's these two dudes who are going to come clean up your neighborhood.
Yep. What I think is great of what all three of us have said, and you know, not to praise Disney too much, but we all liked all of them and in different orders, and right. That's okay. I think that's great.
Except
that
for Jeff's is wrong.
Oh, I forgot. I haven't watched What If yet, so I've got some catching up.
Oh, there you go. But we all liked them, and we all liked them in different order. And I think it all hit us differently of why we liked them. We could talk about specifically why we liked them like you did, Joe. But I just think that's awesome that they're coming out with all these different angles on these, and people are liking them in different ways. And people shouldn't argue over which ones are better. They should celebrate that right. They all are great, and they help. Like it, people enjoy them in different ways. And I think that's amazing.
That was the great thing about comic books growing up, is like, if you don't like this title, just don't read it. There's another one on the shelf right over there, and you'll enjoy that one. They right. don't all have to be, they're all different enough that they appeal to somebody, and they hopefully appeal to everybody somewhat.
Right.
So,
right. Whenever I'll watch the Marvel movies in any particular order, like Guardians of the Galaxy will come on, and my wife, who isn't, like, she'll watch the movies and stuff. She's like, oh, I like this one. You know, right. she likes the Guardians movies a lot. And the other one, she's like, eh. And it's great. I think that's great that they come out with different, almost risks. Like you said, Joe, like when Guardians came out or when Ant-Man came out, they were very different. Eternals is another one. Like, they're very different stories, right. But they're still Marvel movies.
Yeah. And speaking of Eternals, I think this is actually our first deaf character. Yep. Makari was kind of deaf, but I think that they're really bringing it. And I'm hearing that Echo is going to get her own spin-off series soon. So
I heard that might be true. Yep. That'd be great.
Very excited about that. But yeah, you're dead on, Mark. There's so much for people to enjoy. There's, I don't know why people argue about which one's better.
Right. Except it's Wanda, like, just talk best. About how it hit you and why that was so special. Don't argue that WandaVision is the best or not. Let's just talk about, that's really great. Like, I think it's great that they can tell these different stories and we can all enjoy them.
Yeah. If you can tell a 6-episode story about Hawkeye, you can do anything. Because nobody knows that dude.
I thought you were going to say you liked it so much because of the LARPing that was going on in the series, Joe.
That is true. But I also really like the introduction to Kate Bishop too. Because I think she'll be an interesting addition to the, like WandaVision, Falcon Winter Soldier, even Loki. They didn't really introduce new characters too that I don't think are going to be like, but I just loved the way it ended. Of like, she's trying to come up with different names for herself. And he's like, I got a name for you.
That's right. And did you see, like, they acknowledge that his wife was a former superhero?
Yes.
Huh?
Yeah. That
was great.
And did you see the code on her watch?
Uh-huh.
Agent 19.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Which is Joe?
Mockingbird.
Yeah, from the I comics? Thought you were saying Mockingjay.
Mockingbird, but... They're supposed to be introducing Bobby Morse, who is the actual Mockingbird, at some point in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. So I think it's a nice touch that Hawkeye's wife carried that designation, but I don't think that she'll actually be Mockingbird. I would be surprised.
I hope they bring the Mockingbird from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. in, because I really like Adrian Palicki. I think she's really good.
Be good.
I think so. Like, they can bring it all from the multiverse. Maybe there'll be multiple Mockingbirds at some point. See, that's how the multiverse right. works.
I did love the cliffhanger thing. He's like, I got a name. You're like, yeah. Yay, say it.
He's not going to. And then it caps off with the happiest Marvel moment, Rogers the Musical.
I thought that was the best.
And they were using actual Broadway actors in that production. And
were they really?
Oh, yeah. And I'm thinking, okay, how long before we have an actual Rogers the Musical on Broadway?
Well, after Disney's Spider-Man. Behind it.
Well, yeah, the Spider-Man thing, but Disney is behind it now. So they've done all kinds of Disney adaptations on Broadway.
And there was a Rogers the Musical cameo in Spider-Man Far From Home movie.
Yes.
If you blink and you miss it, there's a Rogers the Musical billboard up there.
That was great.
That was a great ending.
You want to bet it won't go to Broadway that they're saving it for the Disney theme park? Made yeah. exclusive.
That's probably true.
The level of writing on it would probably fit better there. It was a little bit cheesy.
I love it. So sounds like we all liked it. Any thoughts? We'll cover Disney Plus Day still at some point. Any big, what are you looking forward to in 2022 from the Disney Plus series? Which ones are you most excited for? Which one?
I looked at the movies that are coming out, and it's a really killer lineup. But and you said it earlier, Joe, I think the one I'm looking forward to the most is Doctor Strange Multiverse of Madness, just because they play it up so well, even at the end of the end credits in Spider-Man. But Morbius, Thor, Black Panther, and Spider-Verse 2 all come out as well. But I would say Doctor Strange Multiverse is number one on my list.
Does Thor come out next year?
Yeah. Thor, Love and Thunder. Mm. Yes.
Yeah,
that's a tough thousand. Thousand tied for us, one and one A.
Yeah, Jeff.
As far as the series go, I'm very, very curious about She-Hulk. I think I'm gonna love it.
Yep,
I think so. That's a character I've always loved too, and I will be interested to see where they take it, because I'm trying to get Michael to record a podcast with me on the She-Hulk run that I actually really enjoyed from, I don't know, 6, 7, maybe 8 years ago. Where it's just following her as a lawyer. She just shows up and she's taking all kinds of superhero cases. And then, like, I don't know whether it's a first or second issue. Like, Peter Parker's finally had enough and he sues the Bugle for like defamation of character. And she's his lawyer.
That's great. That'd be fun to do.
Matt Murdock might be the go-to lawyer now. She-Hulk looks very interesting. And then we'll have to talk about Moon Knight at some point, because Moon Knight's all over the board. And his name is Mark Spector, spelled with a C.
You gotta trust those guys that spell Mark with a C, that's for sure.
Well, they got Oscar Isaac, so it's kind of hard to go wrong.
Yep. But I agree with you, Jeff. It'll be interesting. Whenever I'm skeptical, I always default to, you know, in Disney and Marvel, I trust, like, that they'll figure it out. And that's, I am excited to see them.
Yep. All right, fellas. Well, thanks for joining me to talk about Spider-Man Far From Home, Hawkeye. We're, you know, big thumbs up on all of those. Marvel can just keep trucking along and printing piles and piles of cash. As long as they, as long as they keep delivering, I'm in. So thanks for joining. We'll see if maybe I can find some Rogers the Musical music to hear to take us out and see if I can evade Disney's copyright lawyers for another day.
Good luck with that.
All right. Well, thanks for joining, everybody, and we will talk to you soon. How do I stop recording?
Well, that'll be your marker.
Today, the sun is gone and the clouds turn gray. Just what's coming is hard to say. I don't know. There's a battle above the street. The ground is rolling below our feet. The sky's turned red and I feel the heat. Gotta go. Who can save us?
If you've got a comic you'd like to hear us talk about, please let us know on Twitter, at Casual Comics Guy, at our blog, CasualComicsGuy.com, or on our Facebook page, Casual Comics Cast. So until next time, stay safe and stay frosty, people.